We're building wealth. Our net worth is increasing. And that increase in net worth does what? It buys us more cash flow, which is more income, on which we are taxed at a lower rate than everybody else. Mm-hmm. So learn how to play the game.
Welcome to the Get Real Podcast, your high-octane boost of full-on reality therapy for personal, business, and investing success with your host, Ron Phillips. Because somebody's got to tell it like it is.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Get Real Podcast. Ron Phillips here. Heather Marchant here from somewhere in an undisclosed location across the country.
I'm outside of Memphis today. So,
some random office outside of Memphis. Location not to be disclosed. We don't want anybody you going over there and bothering Heather while she's playing. So... actually, you're going to go around it today and do what you've been doing, right? Meet with some of our suppliers, some support staff, and then drive by one of our new construction areas, right?
Yeah, I'm super pumped because I'm going to go take some video for clients of new construction properties that we have.
All right. So Heather's going to be a little echoey today because she is in like a bunker or something.
I'm pretty sure this is their like tornado shelter room because it's like all cinder block, but it's their conference room. So
this is awesome. It's so awesome. Okay, so today, as promised, we are going to continue with our two a week, and this is actually going to be our first week with two. So if you missed last week, Heather and I decided that we were going to do two a week for about 5 weeks. And we are going to do like an investing, like an intensive investing thing, right? So all about rental properties, kind of a series. So we started that last week, and this week we're going to continue, and then we're going to drop another episode, Wednesday or Thursday. I haven't decided yet. But one of those 2 days, we're going to drop an extra bonus episode, and then we'll be back on our normal scheduled Monday. All right, we're going to do this for a little bit. Don't get spoiled. Because as soon as the series is over, Heather and I are going to go back to normal. Because
that's right.
Neither one of us really want to work that hard. Okay. All right. So today, Heather, we're going to talk about rental properties, kind of versus everything else, and then we're going to dive into what you would want to look for. And this is really fun. I enjoy this part.
Yeah. All the time.
Mostly because I get to beat up on stocks and things that I don't like. But. To all of you out there who love stocks, don't send us hate mail. Stocks are fine. I just don't understand them very well. And so because of that, and because they just don't have all the cool things that rental properties do, I don't really like them. All right. So let's get started. Let's define for everybody what invest actually means, Heather, because I think some people may have some misconceptions about what it actually means to invest.
Yeah, I think one great example I've always shared is that you called yourself an investor when you were flipping and rehabbing properties, and instead you were just replacing your income with another job, right? So,
yeah, I mean, if you have to constantly work, then it is not an investment, right? Because invest, like the dictionary definition of invest, is to expend money with the expectation of achieving profit. Or material result by putting it into financial plans, shares, property, or by using it to develop a commercial venture. So the key to that being it's your money, right? We're going to expend money. It didn't say expend your time running around putting flyers on doors. It didn't say get a hammer and go and, rehab houses. Nothing wrong with any of that. Nothing wrong with any of that. Just understand what it is, right? It is, it's either a job or it's a business, one of the two, but it's not an investment, all right? And so it's a really good way to go out and earn a lot of money so that you can invest. And most of the people that I know who are really successful at this, and Heather, you know this as well as I do because they keep some of the properties that they're going to send us, they invest in their trade, right? So they invest and hold properties, which, sometimes we don't like because we prefer to have them for you guys, but, we'd be kind of hypocrites if we didn't, back them up on investing themselves.
Yeah. And for me, I think a lot of the key distinctions too are about you're not trading hours for dollars at this, at the investment side of things. So I talk to a lot of clients that misunderstand this. So self-managing your own properties and is still in some way trading hours for dollars. So there are some distinctions that I like to make with people. Like, well, is that really investing your money if you have where you're going by the property every week? And
and how do you stop working in that scenario? If that's what you're building for yourself, then how do you ever stop? Yeah. You can't ever stop if you're the one who has to run everything. And that goes back to, you know, what we've talked about literally ad nauseum, which is leverage. And if you are doing everything yourself because you're the greatest at it, which you very well may be, but if you're not leveraging the time, talents, abilities, and everything else of other people, then you're going to be stuck doing everything yourself. And good hell, that's lonely. You know, anyway, you don't want to do that anyway. So let's kind of talk about the difference between, you know, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, name your investment, other than real estate, because real estate has some pretty cool things. And I love this part because I don't know how long ago it's been, but this just epiphany came to me and I was like, in order for a stock to do what real estate does, I mean, describing a stock in the way that you would describe real estate really makes it stand all by itself. And so I want you guys to take a second and let this just digest what I'm going to say here, because I'm going to talk about a stock and then I want you guys to picture this stock. And, you know, Heather, jump in anytime and expand on this stuff as we're going through. But this, I want you to go to your stockbroker and I want you to ask for a stock. Okay. But this stock is a unique stock. Okay. Because in order for you to buy it, he has to come up with one that you can own 100% of it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So not a portion, all of it. Okay. So you want to buy all of the stock. In addition, you have to personally be able to affect the value of the stock.
So like I that one is so interesting because when you invest in a stock, you literally are at the mercy of other people to do their job.
Yes. They could do a great job or they could get on Twitter and say something stupid and then the company's dead. Literally, it could be something as simple as getting on Twitter and saying something stupid, company over, investment gone, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to have the personal ability to make a change, right? So you have, and I guess if you own 100% of the stock, you might be able to do that, okay? So you have to have all of these, not one of them by itself, right? So you could buy 100% of the stock in a company. That actually could happen if you had the money to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. And then you probably could personally affect the value, but if you can't buy 100% of it, then you certainly can't personally affect the value because other people are in charge, like Heather was saying. Third, it's got to have a really good paying dividend. It's got to have a high dividend, okay? And that's the cash that it produces on an annual basis, quarterly basis, whatever it is, okay? But in addition to the dividend, it has to also produce a really high potential for growth. Usually, those don't go together. Usually, if you have a high producing dividend, it kind of doesn't grow. And if it's a high growth stock, it usually doesn't have a dividend at all. And even if it does, it's not very much. Okay. Then this starts to get kind of tricky. Okay? Because you got to have all of that stuff. Plus, I want to be able to buy it on payments at a fixed rate over 30 years.
Just when you buy the whole stock, you get to, you know, make payments on all your stock instead of paying for them up front.
Yeah, and I don't want to chase the payment around, so I want it fixed for 30 years. And, you know, right now I want it at like 3.5%. Why not, right? And then while I'm asking for the moon, why don't I just go ahead and say, and I also, I want to be rather leveraged. I want to be into this thing, you know, with maybe 20% of my own money and leverage 80% or 75%, right? The best part of this whole deal is that not only do I want all of that, Heather, I just want someone else to pay for it. So all of the payments that I have, I just want someone else to pay for it.
Is it so much to ask? Like, come on.
Right. Right. And then, you know, just as a little cherry on top, I want this stock to also produce some massive tax benefits. That way I don't have to pay taxes on the cool dividend or on the growth. That's all I want.
It's not that hard.
That's all I want. So I just, you know, have you guys pictured the stock? Has everybody pictured the stock now? Because I know Heather's pictured the stock. I mean, obviously, because it exists out there. I'd give you guys the ticker, but then you guys would buy all of it on payments over 30 years and have somebody else pay for it. Listen, this doesn't exist, guys, but this is how, you know, people start to, they try to compare real estate to the stock market, and it doesn't, there is no comparison. You cannot take this and compare it to that. They're not on the same playing field, not even close. It's not even on the, in the same league as real estate.
Yeah.
So can you make money in the stock market? Absolutely. I'd be a fool to tell you you can't. I know a lot of people who do. Can you make money when it's going up, when it's going down, when it's going sideways? Yes, absolutely you can. Do those things both match real estate? So stocks and real estate, yes. Can you make money in real estate going up? Yes. Can you make it going down? Yes. Can you make it going sideways? Yes. So those things are all true. Challenges. Yeah. The rest of it is not true. I mean, not even a little bit. So
you just start laughing halfway through the list, I think, like I did. Like,
oh, right. Okay, so now that we've kind of flogged that just a little bit, it's important. So, I mean, real estate kind of stands alone in my mind. Obviously, I am biased. I love real estate. But I think when you look at it through that lens, it's pretty difficult to make an argument that any of the other investments are better. Now, should you have all of your eggs in one basket? No. But should you have a bunch of them in the basket that you can control and manage yourself? Yeah, I think you'd be a fool not to. Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about returns. Heather, what are the four returns of real estate?
Oh, man, it's so good. So cash on cash return is just your cash flow. So the property above and beyond expenses is going to give you a profit at the end of the day. So I just spoke with a client just yesterday who, and I told him, I said, this is a really common thing. I said, okay, you own rental property. And I said, how much does it cash flow? And they tell me the rent. And I'm like, no. Cash on cash return is not the rent. It is rent minus expenses. And that's your return. So that's your cash return on investment or cash on cash return. Then you have your principal reduction, which is your tenant paying down your mortgage, that one that Ron mentioned of someone else making the payments for you, which is pretty awesome.
And most people, they forget that that's a return. I mean, someone is literally paying your investment off. Like, they're paying for it. It happens every year. Whether you break even on cash flow or not, someone is paying your mortgage down. All right,
yep. And they're happy to do it. Like, you're giving them a place to live, right? So
I get
notifications from one of our property managers when applications are filled out. And I saw one come through this last week where the tenant was like begging to live there. You know what I mean? Like, you're serving someone else and then they pay off your debt for you. It's pretty cool. The third one, your tax deductions, your depreciation that you can write off on your taxes. Mm-hmm. You can have the 27 and a half year depreciation schedule where you're writing off the structure, not the land. And it's decent, right, Ron? I mean, it's like single family home, $500-$700 a year. That's pretty awesome. And tax savings, sorry. And then your appreciation. So the property appreciating in value.
So there's four of them. Crazy thing is that they all happen simultaneously. Yeah. And you can leave it at that. You can leave it at that. Find me a stock that has a cash return that appreciates in value and that has principal reduction because I'm able to buy it on payments. Again, somebody else is paying for it for me. and it produces tax deductions. You might be able to get three of the four, but you're not going to get four of the four. Mm-hmm. And it would take a very special one to even get three of the four. Yeah. And most of those are closed, or us, the normal peasants, can't actually get them, right? Those go to insiders. So how do you calculate the return? So again, this is going to take an imagination. If you already know how to do this, then it's simple. But if you don't know how to do this, then it's really important to understand how. So let's go back to the cash flow one. So if your property cash flows $1,000 a year and you put $10,000 down, then your return is $1,000 divided by the 10,000, which gives you a decimal, two decimals. If you go back to, I don't know if that's elementary or middle school math. I'm not sure exactly when you learned that one, but you move the decimal places. You probably do because you have kids doing it right now, right?
My fifth graders are only doing fractions. They still haven't learned that. So
okay. No, it's middle school.
Yeah, probably.
Middle school math, you move the decimal place over two places, and it'll give you a percentage, right? Now, when you do that, that's 10%. Okay, if you divide those two, it's 10%. So all you're doing is you're taking your income or the return, and you're dividing it by the investment or what you put into the property. Okay, that gives you your return. So it's a very simple calculation. People overthink it. And you can do that on all of the four. So whatever your tax savings are, you divide that by what you invested in the property, and it gives you your return. So each one of these, you're able to calculate what your return is. You add them all up. That gives you your total return on the property for the year, which is disgusting if you actually add those up.
It seems like it's fake. Like it's not possible. I will say, when people don't understand the cash on cash return, another way of explaining the same thing is to say it's what percentage of your money you're getting back every year from your investment, right? So it's sometimes people have a hard time understanding the formula, but yeah, that helps sometimes.
The other thing that people have a hard time understanding, I remember having this conversation with one of our clients that was in our building or close to our building. He would stop by and he would say, "I just don't get this leverage piece. I don't understand." Because in his world, the investment world, you pay cash for everything and then your return. He knew how to calculate the return. The challenge was he didn't understand. He would come in and he said, my return's low. It's not double digits, it's low. Then we go through it again. We're like, look, you didn't pay $100,000 for the property. I mean, you did, but you only put of your cash, you only put $20,000 into the property. So your investment isn't $100,000, it's $20,000. And he would go, yeah. And then he would leave, and then it would go right back, right? He would come back. I don't understand how. So part of the problem is people don't understand that because the property is $100,000, you're only putting, because of leverage, remember, we're only putting 20% in or $20,000 in. So if I make $1,000 in cash flow that year, it's not $100,000 divided by, it's not the 1,000 divided by 100,000, it's 1,000 divided by 20,000, mm-hmm. right? It's completely different. And so that's a really, really important thing to keep in mind, because especially when you start to get into appreciation, because people know, because they hear on the news what appreciation rates are. Sometimes they're 3%, sometimes they're 8%. Very rarely they're double digits, but sometimes they are, but they're really not ever 20. I mean, they don't get to be 25% except for in 2006 and 2007 in certain markets. It's very rare for that to happen.
Yeah.
And yet, when you look at a pro forma, they're almost always above 20%. Heather, I mean,
yeah.
When people go, well, it's not even believable. Because appreciation rates are not 25%. But the appreciation rate wasn't 25%, it was 5%. So how did we get 25% return? Well, it's because 5% is $5,000 on a $100,000 property. Mm-hmm. $5,000 divided by $20,000 is what?
25%.
I mean, folks, sometimes it takes just sitting down and actually looking at the math for a minute to understand how powerful this is. Because if you get 5% return by appreciation on a $100,000 property, but you only put $20,000 in, your return is 25%. I'm pausing for effect. I want that to sink in. Think in. And that is why the numbers look so staggering, because when you start to stack these things up, your total return is so substantial that people look at it and they go, there's no way that's true.
Yeah.
And then if they do it, Heather, like 1 year or 2 years in, they go, what the heck happened? Yeah. Like, where'd all this money come from? Well, yeah. It happens every year. Just keeps happening. Right.
Well, I can give an example from my portfolio that I've shared in here before on the podcast. Is I paid $70,000 for a house that's now worth about $110,000, but my down payment on the house was roughly like $16,000, right? So that's insane to pay $16,000 for a house and my tenant's paying my debt off for me, right? And so now I have all that equity that I can turn and sell and grow my portfolio.
Yes. So the one investment, because of growth, cash flow, principal reduction, all of that stuff, is spawning multiple more. Yes. Without adding any more money of yours.
Mm-hmm. And right? It's only been 3 years since I bought it. Like, it's not like I've held it for 20 years and that's why it's worth so much more. So.
And that, folks, that is what I saw a post on a buddy of mine. I think it was Tom Kroll, who, if you don't know him, you should look him up. Tom's a stud. K-R-O-L, Tom Kroll. He's a stud, and he posted this the other day. He said, net worth is the new, oh my gosh, credit score. He said, net worth is the new credit score. And I thought about that for just a second, and I thought, and I, my comment was, it always has been. People just don't know. Mm-hmm. People just didn't know, because we've been taught high credit score. And you've seen the posts go around Facebook. People ask, would you rather have $1 million in cash? Would you rather have an 850 credit score? Would you rather have, you know, X amount of dollars per, I mean, and it's amazing to me how many people say, I'd rather have an 850 credit score. Give me the cash. Give me the million in cash right now. I'll create an asset that will create more money than this, you know, however much a month it was. Mm-hmm. And I'll have the asset that continues to increase in value. Both. I'll have all of the above. I'll have everything. And I don't care what my credit score is. It's beyond comprehension. And so when he said that, I'm thinking, yeah, we're investing, making sure that the properties cash flow, Heather, but we're building wealth. We're building wealth. Our net worth is increasing. And that increase in net worth does what? It buys us more cash flow, which is more income, on which we are taxed at a lower rate than everybody else. Mm-hmm. So learn how to play the game.
Yeah. I mean, on my rental property portfolio, I pay almost no taxes on my cash flow that I make from my property because of all the write-offs against it. So
yeah. Unbelievable. It is one of the most tax advantage investments you can buy. And so let's talk really quickly about, in the time we have left, let's talk about what, you know, what kind of properties there are and, you know, and how they work, what the pros and cons are to each one of these, right? So, Heather, talk us through like single family homes. Yeah. What's the cool pros and cons?
Single family homes and should be in most of our clients' portfolios, in my opinion, just because they're easy to buy and sell. So I tell a lot of my clients, if you ever have a life-changing event and you need to liquidate quickly, you have your single family homes that you can sell really fast. If you were in a bind for whatever reason. So I love starting there with new investors. Very rarely do we have a new client come and talk to us and we say, you know what you should do? You should buy a 20 unit apartment building. You've never done that
for your first investment. Why not? Let's just do 300.
Go all in. Let's do this. Yeah. It's very rare that anyone starts with multifamily, unless it just depends on their particular situation, maybe their tax situation, et cetera. But for the most part, we're starting with a small single family home, testing the waters. They're the most desirable for tenants. I rented for a lot of years when Ron and I first started working together, and I rented a basement apartment. And I remember being so excited to have a single family home that was ours to rent with our own backyard, and our kids can run around and play without sharing common space. Mm-hmm. So definitely the most desirable. There's a couple cons, I guess, to single family homes that people should be aware of. You get one tenant or one door per purchase. So there's a couple of things that go into that. So if that tenant moves out and or they're not paying rent for whatever reason, then you are coming up with all of the expenses at that time. And you also have complications with lending a little bit that you are, most people right now, as of today's recording, you can get 10 conventional mortgages. And so 10 single family homes, you're using up those mortgage positions fairly quickly. And then it can, that can just complicate your ability to scale and to purchase more rental properties. So right. It's good to just be aware of the limiting factors. So
I mean, there used to be these package loans, right? And they've kind of gone away. It's very difficult to find them where you could pool a bunch of properties, single family homes together. You can get fantastic financing for them, and you can't do that really anymore. Most of the players in that space are no longer in that space. So, you know, that may change, but for right now, it's really, really hard to scale. Mm-hmm. So then there's 2 to 4 family units, right? So we move into those, and you've got different pros, you got different cons. They're easy to buy and own too, same as the single family homes, up to 4 units. You know, they're bigger, the bigger purchase price, but you get more doors, right? So if you buy a fourplex and a tenant moves out, well, you're 25% vacant, not 100% vacant, mm-hmm. right? So if you have, and you have one loan for those 4 doors. So if you're trying to scale, it's easier to scale than, you know, Heather was just talking about the single family homes, because you still have, that's a conventional mortgage, which means you could literally get 40 units on conventional mortgages instead of 10. You can leverage even more. And so more doors, less vacancy. More doors you have, less of vacancy hurts you. But the cons is that they're significantly more expensive. Obviously, you're buying a bigger building. All things being equal, they're probably about 4 times as expensive. The loans are a little less attractive. You got to put 25% down instead of 20% down. So you have to come up with more money, which hurts your, and the more money you come up with, the less leveraged you are, which means the lower your return is. All right. So you have to find something that actually compensates for that. And they're the opposite. I mean, you have a really nice one, but most tenants would prefer to live in a house than in a fourplex. Most. You know, some actually prefer it because then they don't have to mow the lawn or anything like that. But for the most part, that's going to be true. Mm-hmm. All right. And I think just generally speaking, we're going to spend a little bit more time on this in one of the other episodes about what exactly you should look for in each one of these things and the different types of real estate, A, B, and C class properties and things like that in another episode. But let's just recap really quick. I think the most important things, Heather, that we talked about today are just how powerful is real estate, which hopefully at this point everybody knows. Mm-hmm. If you didn't before today, you should now, because we went over it pretty in detail, and we laughed at stocks, which was a lot of fun. We went over calculating return on investment, how to do it, how important it is. The other, I think in our first one, we went over the rule of 72. So now you can see not only how important is the rule of 72, but you can also see that you get to use the rule of 72 4 times per investment to see really what it looks like to double your money. We talked about the different
attractive.
Oh my gosh. So, and then we just talked about the different types of, smaller properties. We didn't really jump into apartments. I don't think we really have time for that. It's a completely different deal. And apartments are just a whole different concept. We'll spend a little bit of time talking about those in another one of the episodes. But this series, look for the next one this week. Should be Wednesday or Thursday. Once we figure it out this week, we'll tell you exactly what it is every week moving forward. And then we're going to keep doing this for about the next 5 weeks.
And keep in mind, you'll probably have questions that pop up while we're doing it, and know that this series builds upon each other, all of the episodes. So while we didn't go into details on financing, we covered financing today, we will cover financing in greater detail in another episode as part of the series. So.
Absolutely. So, wow, I had some static. It was like I was back in the military. I don't know what was going on right then. Kind of flashback. Okay, so everybody, remember, if you like our episodes, we really appreciate you guys leaving us written reviews. We're getting a lot of those. It's giving us more traction. We're reaching more people, which is so much fun. We get your comments, and they're so good. So if you have questions, obviously this is going to build on each other, but email them in. Invest@rpcinvest.com. Email them in. Make sure you share this with everybody. You can share it on Facebook or wherever you want, Twitter, and get the word out there. In addition to that, I want you guys to remember from our first episode of this series that what you do today will affect you not tomorrow. It affects you like a year from now. So make sure you get out there and make something happen today. All right? Till next time, guys. Get out there and make something happen.
This has been the Get Real Podcast. To subscribe and for more information, including a list of all episodes, go to GetRealEstateSuccess.com.